the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. Hi, once again. That was Sarita singing Sonny and Frank Sinatra introducing me on The Tonight Show. Welcome to Las Vegas and John Barber's world, where March Madness continues. And March Madness today was definitely John Kasich, the governor, speaking at AIPAC today. I cannot wait to hear what Joe Satilli has to say about this a little later in the show. It's Monday, March 21st. Spring is in the air and anger is in my heart. Now, folks, they say, whoever they is, they say that the truth will set you free. I'm telling you, it does not. It just upsets you and makes you angry. Now, you know, ordinarily, I like to start each show with a few humorous comments about the news, but not today. Today, I feel a lot less like Jimmy Kimmel and more like John Oliver or Howard Beale. I am mad as hell. And I'm not mad at the establishment or the bankers or the military intelligence Goliath that have overwhelmed our lives since the murder of John Kennedy. We all know how venal and corrupt they and the system are. I'm not mad at the pathetic charade they call a Democratic presidential election, with, except for Bernie, bottom-of-the-barrel scrapings for candidates. I am mad at a lot of my fellow citizens. I am mad at a lot of you. And here's why. Yesterday, in Phoenix, hundreds of blacks flooded the freeways, preventing people from getting in to hear Donald Trump. I am definitely not a fan of Donald Trump, but I am a fan of the First Amendment. Freedom of speech, folks, is also freedom of hate speech, to be countered with smarter speech. Trump and his followers were denied it by these primarily black crowds. Now, these black crowds and scores of wealthy white Republicans are gathering in droves all around the country in an effort to stop Donald Trump before he gets into office. Now, some are terrified of his possible bigotry, and the wealthier ones are terrified because he might change the corrupt system, which he's already pointed out to us, by just entering the race. His followers have punched a few blacks and slapped a woman's face. Absolutely horrible. Absolutely terrible. But he hasn't murdered anyone. Bill Clinton has. Nearly 100 innocent women and children at Waco. Why weren't there armies of angry blacks being led by Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton hauling Clinton's murderous, lecherous ass out of the Oval Office and into the Senate for impeachment? And where were you outraged laborers, thousands of workers of all colors? Why weren't you doing the same after he signed NAFTA and sent your jobs to Asia? And George Bush, he murdered hundreds more. His lying, illegal invasion of Iraq, where an ancient culture and 500,000 innocent people perished, as well as thousands of duped American soldiers. Where were your goddamned outraged crowds then for a known war criminal? Or now, outraged mobs for Obama, Wall Street's lawn jockey. Obama has persecuted and hounded more whistleblowers against the corporations that run us and the government that protects them and pays them than all presidents combined. that he is trying to imprison Ed Snowden, who had to flee his country to tell us the truth from afar about governmental destruction of our liberties and privacy. Where were your outraged forces then? Your disinterest has allowed America to become a country where truth tellers run for their lives and liars run for office. Now, one of those liars may be Donald Trump. Listen, don't lynch, because one of the things Trump says, not one candidate would dare whisper. Trump has said he will look into 9/11. And he said, it may turn out, folks, that the Saudis did it. Now, I don't know the perpetrators of this most heinous crime in America since they murdered John Kennedy. And you don't know either. It's all speculation. Because the government, led by that cowardly George Bush holding hands with his puppet master, Dick Cheney, prevented a real, truthful investigation. But like you, I would like to find out who. And maybe if Trump, or someone who wants the truth, gets into office, maybe we'll then hear from the one woman, the one scientist who other scientists say has proven how the towers came down. We are going to hear from that woman now. Again, a long-awaited second visit. Her phenomenally, meticulously researched and unchallenged book, Where Did the Towers Go?, has been called the most important book of the century. I've read it twice. It is indeed the scientific Bible of how those buildings came down. Right now, once again, its distinguished author, Dr. Judy Wood. Dr. Wood, thank you so much for being here and welcome once again to the show.
Well, thank you, and thank you especially for having read the book.
Well, you told me you wouldn't come on if I didn't read the
right.
book. So I paid attention, and I should tell the audience, it's just a little sidebar, but to me it's so adorable. Mark Twain once said, show me a person who loves cats, and that's all I need to know about them. Dr. Wood, where are you? Where are you calling from, Dr. Wood?
South Carolina.
Okay, and who is keeping you company as you talk to me?
Oh, this is Wile E. Coyote.
Coyote is what, your cat?
Yep, yeah, he's a dog in a cat costume.
And you have other cats?
One other one.
And what's that other cat called?
That's Yogi Bear.
That is adorable. Well, I have three rescue cats. One of them, I rescued a family, a kid had gouged the eye out of the cat, and I rescued it. I call him Cy, which is short for Cyclops. And before we went on the air, you had Wile E. Coyote up at the microphone purring. And
here he is.
Okay, put him up there. Can you hear him? Okay. Okay, Dr. Wood, you said that both cats purr, and you have a friend named John Hutchinson. Now, first of all, tell me who John is. I know a little bit about him, but expand on who John Hutchinson is, how you happened to know him, and was it a result of your research into why the towers came down or how the towers came down, or did you know him beforehand?
I didn't know him beforehand. After I had tabulated all of the evidence at the scene, I happened upon a website or a blog. And it had all of the same phenomena in this guy's blog. Who is this? I got to go meet this person. And so I went to visit him and saw the work myself. You know, I'm from Missouri, you know, the Show Me State.
Yes.
I got to see it. I got to see it for myself, and I did.
Well, what was it that John could do that he put up on his site? Now, I had read when he was in, I believe he was in British Columbia, a couple of times the Canadian government broke into his place and stole his work or shut down his work. What does he do?
Yeah, well, he is an experimenter and has fun with physical phenomenon. and experiments and had discovered if you mix, you create a static field, and within the static field, you interfere various radio frequency signals, weird things happen. And one person wrote it up as lift or disruption. In other words, the material comes apart or it floats up, comes off the ground, like anti-gravity.
And do you still have, well, you said that John, this came about because your cats, he literally can tell the difference between the purring sound of your two cats.
Right, right. This one he calls the square wave generator.
In the beginning of your book, and we're going to get a little darker now, but in the beginning of the book, you acknowledge a lot of people who helped you and encouraged you, but you mention them only by their first names.
Oh, in the back, yeah, in the acknowledgement section, right. Yeah.
Oh, did you do that to protect them?
Yes. The dead people have their entire name listed. But live people have just the first name, with sometimes with the last initial.
When you were starting the research and you got more advanced in your research, did you take on assistants to help you?
No, I've pretty much done it all myself, and then I've had some friends helping at different points that I couldn't have done it without them. Russ Gerst, especially, and Andrew Johnson.
You mentioned two names. Does that mean they're both dead?
No, but in the book, I just had first names because the various internet trolls would hunt people down and harass them to death.
Now, have you had anyone working closely with you, dear, who has lost their life as a result of their involvement in this?
Well, I had a graduate student who was murdered. And several other people who have been murdered. But I don't like to focus on that because I don't want there to be more.
Well, certainly you wouldn't want to focus on it, but do you believe it was a direct result of the work that you and they were doing?
Yes, but not in the way that you would think. And I don't like to get into it because I don't want to give anybody, congratulations, so to speak.
Okay, I'm sorry I brought it up. Then the other thing is, finally, it was a few months ago, and that was another one of the reasons that we wanted to book you on the show, aside from Donald Trump's comment, which we'll get to in a minute. But a few months ago, I saw that somebody finally was doing a documentary about you and your work, Where Did the Towers Go? Tell me about that.
Oh, the Adam Dwyer. He was hesitant putting his name out, but he's put it out. He's an engineer who lives in Canada, or used to live in Canada, and bought my book and read it, and then went, oh my gosh, and he got so impressed by it that he made a series of videos about it.
Well, I saw some of the videos that it sent, and he's done a wonderful job. Are all the videos complete? When will they be out, and where could people go and see Mr. Dwyer's videos right now?
If you go to YouTube and do a search on Irrefutable, or tinyurl.com/irrefutabletv, that should take you directly to the series.
Okay, we will get that again later. How many episodes has he done, and how many episodes does he intend to do?
There's an overall link, just a kind of a trailer, and then there's five individual chapters so far. Okay. And he'll be doing more, but he's in the process of moving and doing other things right now.
Do you find that your book is moving more as a result of his documentaries?
A little, but not so much as just word of mouth of the book. The book, once people read it, there's no going back. And they tell others about it, and it's been pretty steady sales of it.
That is wonderful, because it is not an inexpensive book, and I must say, it's a masterwork. It absolutely is.
Thanks. And to the people who think that, you know, there's gobs of money being made on it, there isn't. I basically break even with it. It's like a $350 textbook.
It is totally invaluable. Do you hear now, because you've mentioned just first names of people who've assisted you, okay, so you're protecting them. But do you hear privately from other engineers or scientists who say, Dr. Wood, we like what it is that you're doing. It's wonderful that you did this. But, you know, I just have to stay my distance.
Yeah, there's people who are in business for themselves, and that would, you know, might harm their business. As it was when I was, you know, still at the university, I had various trolls writing to the department chair, writing to the dean, writing to my colleagues. It's very disruptive to that environment, to the work environment.
Now, when these trolls write, do they identify themselves by name? So, I mean, let's say they write to the chancellor at or the president of your university. Does the chancellor get to read that name and get to respond to that person?
Or the dean? I know that they have, because the various folks have posted it on blogs, the responses.
Well, okay. Were you terminated by the school, did you leave voluntarily?
I left voluntarily.
Why?
Well, it's you know, one thing, I didn't get tenure, but that's sort of minor, because I didn't seek elsewhere, because I needed to do this book. I just felt the need to do this. And I couldn't be doing it while employed there anyway, because, you know, you only have so many hours in a day. So where are you going to steal those hours from? Now, it's irresponsible to steal them from your teaching and research duties.
Does the scientific community have their own awards, like their Oscars or their Academy Awards? I mean, the Central Intelligence Agency, a cameraman who worked with me on the Garrison tapes 2 years in a row, taped the award ceremonies at Langley, Virginia, where CIA agents would be given medals and they would applaud and speak. And then afterwards, the medals were to be taken away and put in a box, and the film would be hidden. And he got $50,000 each year that he did that for 2 years. Does the scientific community, like yours, have awards for people who do outstanding work in 1 year that uncovers something important?
Not really. That's another reason why I wanted to leave that environment. It's pretty much all based on how many dollars you bring in.
To the school?
Yeah, research dollars.
So it's like scientific football.
Yeah, and it's exactly, and that's the way our academic system is now structured, which is really sad, because something like, you know, researching what I got into is actually harmful for bringing in research dollars. Nobody would want to fund you, not for that or anything else. You're kind of a hot potato at that point, but also, yeah, you can't get funding for this, so it doesn't get covered.
Would you say that your life is better for what you have done?
Oh, yes. No question. No question.
Tell me about why and how.
When I made the decision to do it, and as I've said many times, is, you know, somebody needed to do it. And whose job is it to do this? Right, I'm not going to be getting all sorts of promotions for doing X, Y, and Z, but what is life about? And whose world is this? Whose country is this? If it's always somebody else's job to do it, then no wonder why things don't get done.
Well, don't you think at the same time there must have been maybe 20 or 30 other scientists and engineers like yourself all around the country who said, gee, there's something wrong here and we should look into it? Do you think anybody else did it besides you?
Probably what I thought initially, they probably also thought initially, which is, well, you know, somebody needs to look into this, but I have my own work to do, and you know, the grown-ups will take care of this.
When
you know, that's their job, and I need to mind my own business and do my work. And And they put their heads down to the grindstone.
When you heard that Donald Trump said a couple of months ago he was going to look into 911, what was your reaction to that?
He's going to publicize. That's sort of like the cover-up run. He's going to be doing whatever the Thermite people suggest that he do.
Why do you say that? I mean, because he said publicly, he said it might have been the Saudis who did it. I mean, he doesn't have any proof of that, except that it wasn't Iraqis who were on the plane where George decided to invade.
Right. One thing I noticed when he first started talking about this kind of thing, it was the talking points memo from about 10 years ago, a truth or talking points memo that he was, you know, talking about, including cleanup vehicles being tracked, having tracking devices on them to make sure all the steel got hauled away to China or whatever the story was at that point. It was really striking to me that the old talking points were what he was promoting, the few bits and pieces I heard him talking about. And
when you say talking points from 10 years ago, who puts together these talking points? And what is the purpose for the talking points?
To control the agenda of what gets looked at, controlling the message. Let's see, all steel was shipped to China. There were stand-down orders, put options. Steel-toed boots were melting. Larry Silverstein and his pullet. It's a list of these things that we just get repeated over and over again. And people do not research that themselves. They just go ahead and repeat it.
Isn't there a video of Larry Silverstein saying "pull it"?
Correct, but we don't know the context. That was film came like a year or two later. It was America Rebuilds, and it was a PBS special, I think. But think about what that statement means. Pull it. That he was telling the fire department to pull the building. Well, they're not in the controlled demolition business.
And they
don't go around with sticks of dynamite in their back pocket just in case, you know, they chuck the dynamite in there. It just doesn't make any sense.
Oh, and you know, there's another video going around now, I think it came out last week, saying that Larry Silverstein, he's somewhere giving a speech talking about the design of the building in the year 2000, which is a year before it happened. Where did that come from?
When you conduct research, you need to first begin with what happened, not who you can make look suspicious.
Right.
And that starts throwing people off, like the truthers were talking about needing to investigate Ace Elevator because they did an elevator upgrade. But what does that have to do with what happened to the building?
It gets people,
you know, running down a bunch of cul-de-sacs about Ace Elevator. You need to first establish what happened, not develop suspicions about people.
And to the layperson, what would you say is the most obvious scientific proof of your book?
Probably the biggest, several things. One was, where's all the debris? By noon on 9/11, there were two buildings there that morning that are no longer there, and enough material isn't there. And a lot of people had commented about that, but then they moved on after that. But the biggest thing, other than just seeing it turn to dust, is no seismic impact that is associated with something slamming to the ground.
That is astonishing, because in the book you have the seismic signals registered on the Richter scale by the King Dome, which, I mean, weighed just a fraction of what one of those towers weighed.
The biggest thing is the King Dome produced surface waves and S waves and P waves, you know, primary waves and secondary waves. When something slams to the ground, it sends a signal through the earth, kind of like whacking a tuning fork with a hammer. But those signals were completely missing. They were undetectable at any of the events in Manhattan that day.
I am just a layperson with a modicum of knowledge about science and physics. The two things that bothered me immediately, first of all, having come out of the news and the media, is that no matter what channel I turned to when I watched the towers, I was getting the same feed.
Exactly.
And I thought, there's something really fishy about getting the same feed on every one of these channels. The other thing that bothered me was the yellow tapes that went up immediately preventing the CSI investigation of the crime scene. Now, that bothered me enormously. And I thought, and do you know that the very next day, Hunter Thompson, you know who Hunter Thompson was?
Yes.
Thompson, that brilliant gonzo profane journalist who could write like nobody about politics, did these great articles for Rolling Stone about Nixon and America. But the day after 9/11, he was on Australian radio, and you can Google it. He was telling the host of that radio show in Australia that this was an inside job. And this was within 12 hours of that destruction. Now, if this drunk who's high on dope knows it, there must have been thousands of much better people, much brighter scientists like this Michio Okoko or whatever his name is, who must have thought there is something fishy here.
Well, you wouldn't have heard of him if he had talked about what was fishy, because it's just like academia. If you're not on the straight path about how many dollars can you bring in, it's politics. Then, you know, you're not going to be heard from. And if he starts, you know, getting on the evening news talking about these weird issues like lack of seismic signal, they won't have him back.
Well, it's astonishing to me that there was no outrage when George Bush refused to testify under oath unless accompanied by Dick Cheney. And I was further outraged when he suggested that the chair of that investigation be Henry Kissinger, another known war criminal, and only the outrage from the fractured families and the grieving families prevented Kissinger from taking that position. Where do you think? Well, are you invited often to speak at colleges anywhere in this country or in Canada or Australia or Europe?
No, I have been set up to give talks at various places, and they get wind that I'm going to be there talking about this topic, and it gets canceled. That's happened.
You're kidding.
That
is appalling. So other than a few isolated incidents like this fellow Dwyer making your documentary or being on a show like this, how do you get the word out other than the word of mouth over your just outstanding book?
I don't. And that's why my book is still around and I'm still around. If I get marginalized enough, then it's not a problem to anybody. And if there's anyone who's questioning 9/11, there's the thermite story to send people.
What do you call the thermite story? Because I know that architects and engineers, they seem to distance themselves from you, which I find really, really strange.
It's a second net. If you don't like the lie behind door number one, they show you the lie behind door number two.
You know,
just anything to keep you from looking at the evidence. If there's a prefabricated story, people will grab onto it, and, oh, good, somebody's looking into it. Go ahead.
The last time, dear, that you were on the show, and this was months ago, and we exchanged some emails, you said something in one of your emails that I thought was really, really profound. And do you mind if I repeat it publicly, even though you'd said it sort of privately to me?
I don't remember what it was, but go ahead.
Oh, well, okay, you can stop me if you wish.
Okay.
But it started because I was, you've heard me talk about the assassination, which I've been deeply involved with, and then trying to get the truth of Garrison's story out, which has been not nearly as difficult as you trying to get the truth of 9/11 out. And you said in the email, and I must tell you, I thought this was brilliant. You said to me, John, do you think if they're going to murder the President of the United States or they're going to destroy the Twin Towers in New York City. Do you think that they're going to stop at just doing that venal, heinous crime? No, they are not. That's only part one, you said. What it is that they do afterwards, they create at the time before they commit the crime, you said they create what the intelligence community calls containers. And that's what it sounds like when you say that architects and engineers, it's a second net or it's a container. Now,
as I often ask people, do you think those who planned 9/11 just forgot to plan a cover-up? And if, okay, so they obviously they're planning the cover-up. Now, would they leave that just up to chance? Because obviously they know that there are going to be people asking questions. So you build it and they will come. You build a collection place. I call those collection agencies. They collect these people who are asking questions, well-intended people who are going to start looking around asking questions. And so what they want out there is this choice. It's the official story or thermite. A 19th century welding material.
Well, I had that same experience with the 12 most important assassination sites when I offered a couple of years ago the Garrison tapes to all of them free to show to all of their subscribers. And every one of them turned me down. And you would think, gee, the first thing they would do was rush to show all these people Jim Garrison's story of his investigation, and they didn't. And I get the sense, you're not saying it, but I get the sense that somehow the Central Intelligence Agency or the intelligence apparatus that runs the country, I mean, In the 70s, Frank Church, Senator Church, discovered there were 1,000 CIA assets in the mainstream media. Now, that's in the 70s. Now, it's 50 years later. We have no real enemies, but we have this perpetual war machine. So the CIA must be infesting everything from churches to schools. They must be every place.
They don't have to work that hard. It's you start an organization, and the people within the organization, you give them a list of talking points, and they memorize the talking points, and onward it goes. And that's what I'm actually saying is the deal with Mr. Trump is he's been given this list of talking points, and so that's where he looks. Or I think actually he's just trying to get votes to satisfy the people out there asking about 9/11.
Because when he said it, I was shocked that he said it. I thought, how, my God, that's like saying I'm going to look into the murder of John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. I mean, how shocking is that? And then the next thing I thought was, well, this guy is never going to get to the White House if he says he's going to investigate 9/11.
Designate Richard Gage's group to come up with something.
Well, in the case of Richard Gage's group, and he gets a lot of press and he gets a lot of time.
Right. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. Well, in order to get this container, this safety net set up so that nobody will look into the crime or look at the facts as you've so brilliantly outlined in your book, how many of those people in that organization would have to be tied to the intelligence community? I mean,
not that many, because those who talked about my work, and there's even videos of somebody going up to Gage and confronting him about this, if they mentioned my work, he banned them from his group because he didn't want to contaminate his group with people who were talking about evidence.
Okay. Now, you said, this is heartbreaking for me because I identify with you so much, but
That's why, even though I didn't study the JFK event, after studying this one, I could just tell the grassy knoll was thermite. It gives the people asking questions. People don't want to accept, a lone gunman story. Well, then they have someplace else to go. It never gets proved or disproved. Well, it's a holding tank.
It's sort of a paradox when you think about it, because I asked you if you were happier. I asked Jim Garrison at the end of our interview is if he would do it again. And he had serious doubts about it because he said he lost the best DA's office in the country. He lost his family. And of course, nobody in the country, none of the leadership in church or state, paid any attention to him. As a matter of fact, they savaged him. So he wasn't sure that he would do it again. Now, you said you were happier because you've done it. Would you do it again?
Somebody had to do it. And the book is out there on the record for those who want to know.
Now, for you, love, how do you make your voice heard more? How do you make the book read more?
Well, I'm not a politician, and I don't try to promote it. I'm, you know, first of all, a scientist and an engineer, forensic engineer, and I did what forensic engineers do. I studied the event and wrote a report. And how that gets perceived, I know nothing about politics except to realize now that I'm the furthest from a politician there is. You know, just the facts, ma'am. Just, you know, here's the truth. And so many people are trying to, like one of the funniest things that Mr. Gage says, well, you can't take that to the public because they won't believe you. So we have to give them this other story. So what he's saying, in essence, is that he agrees with the 9/11 Commission that the public can't handle the truth and needs to be lied to. He just doesn't agree on exactly which lie is best.
Well, you said it was a directed energy device.
Well, that's a second step to it. What I don't say what it was. It's I look at what the destructive mechanism was. How did the building come apart? What happened to the material itself? And the material itself was directed. The energy in the material was directed, given instructions. You call it instructed energy. Is instructed to do something differently than it normally does. Instead of the binding forces of matter being attracted to each other, they're repelling each other. Something instructed them to do that, to act that way. And I'm calling it, the energy was directed. And so it falls under this umbrella of directed energy, but it's not, this laser beam from outer space, which is what the
some of your critics have called it that.
Yeah. But if you look in the book, there's no mention of weapons. There's no mention of,
none whatsoever.
Of evidence.
My question would be, and it's only speculation, with these devices, whatever they were, where could they have been in order to accomplish what it is that they did?
I don't look so much into where something was located. I just look at the, what do we know? Not what can we theorize and speculate and hypothesize about. And what we know is how you produce the exact same effect is creating a static field. Within that static field, you interfere radio frequency signals. And so, I'm not saying that is exactly what happened, but it's parallel evidence that I can provide. The thing that is very much for sure is the technology that did what was done exists because it happened.
Okay, two things.
And so many people like to put a name on it so they can argue about opinions about a name. Rather than the evidence itself is a technology that can turn most of a building to dust in midair must exist because that's what happened.
And that's right. And on a much smaller scale, your friend John Hutchison did that because I saw the videos. Okay. Two things. First of all,
one more thing. There's also a natural phenomenon that can do it as well that has probably been weaponized. That is tornadoes.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Think about it. Think about a weaponized tornado.
Well, there seems to be a lot of evidence that that has already occurred, and it's something that's probably 40 or 50 years old. Dr. Wood, two closing thoughts here. Where can people go to get your book, first of all? Where can people go to see some of the lectures you have done? Want you to do that first. Now, do you have the book in front of you?
Yes.
Okay. Go to that portion of the book that you wrote This is what I'd like your closing comment to be about the world and the energy that exists. You know that it's in this little square box at the top of the page? You know what it is I'm talking about?
The beginning of the book or the end?
Well, I thought it was the beginning of the book because I had marked it, and I'd be darned if I can find it now because I wanted you to read it. And that is about the kind of world that we would be living in with the kind of energy that now exists. It could make life better for all of us. And I'll be darned. I had marked it, and I'll be darned if I can find it.
Let's see. Well, I have my poem, Magic of the Heart, but that's... Well, okay, the last one, the final thoughts. We stand at the dawn of an entirely new age.
Yes, that's it. Okay, now, first of all, tell me, where can we go to get your book? Where can we go to look at some of those magnificent lectures that you gave?
Well, if you go to my website, which is drjudywood.com, that's D-R, Judy Wood, 2 4-letter names, drjudywood.com, at the top of my homepage is a video from the Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference, and it was in Holland.
Okay.
And there's links to the book there, or you can go to wheredidthetowersgo.com, all one word, wheredidthetowersgo.com.
Okay, now read that final piece there.
Okay, we stand at the dawn of an entirely new age. By all evidence, man has in his hands a method of disrupting the molecular basis for matter and the ability, very possibly, to split the earth in half at a moment's notice. The technology demonstrated on 9/11 can indeed split the earth in half, or it can be used to allow all people to live fruitful, constructive, and non-polluting lives through their use of free energy. But he who controls the energy controls the people. Control of energy, depending on what that energy is, can either destroy or sustain the planet. We have a choice, and the choice is real. We can live happily and fruitfully and productively, or we can destroy the planet and die, every last one of us, along with every living being on this planet. These are the reasons I have spent much time studying the evidence of what happened on 9/11. 9/11 was the demonstration to the world of a new technology known as free energy. This is a force that can be used for demonic, ruinous, earth-destructive purposes, or it can be used for the good of us, of the earth, and of our civilization. We have a choice. And that choice is ours. But in order to exercise that choice, in order to be equipped to exercise it, we must keep our eyes open wide and our minds, both our scientific and our social humanistic minds, unverbally on high alert. After all, two of the very tallest buildings in the world went missing on that awful, grievous day in September. Yep. And yet no one continued to ask, where did the towers go?
Well, Dr. Wood, I want to thank you very, very, very much for being here. Thank you again for your magnificent book, and the best of luck to you. And we will talk again soon.
Thank you very much,
Doctor. Have a wonderful day, and love your cats, okay? Wiley Taylor.
Yep.
Okay, good night, dear.
Good night.
I'd like to hear from Joe as soon as possible, if he's there.
As soon as possible, ASAP. Better than Domino's Pizza, John.
Oh, Joe.
Which, by the way, is now being delivered by robot in
yeah,
test runs.
I saw that. Isn't that really pathetic? Oh, my God. Pretty soon they'll have drones delivering them, not just robots. Anyway... Your thoughts on Dr. Wood and your thoughts on Donald Trump's comment about investigating 911 if he becomes president.
Well, I thought the interesting thing that Dr. Wood said was that it probably has something to do with appealing to the people who are interested in knowing more about what happened. Now, he has notably been on the Alex Jones show I think once, maybe twice. And that's, as you know, you and I have discussed many times, it's a very powerful megaphone that Alex Jones has. I think he doesn't use it always for good. I think it's turned into a really an ATM machine for him. And the fact that he jumps immediately on everything is a government conspiracy inside job without him ever collecting a single fact just kind of shows that he's developed a shtick. And I guess, you know, birds of a feather flock together, him and Donald Trump. But what Donald Trump was really saying is incredibly crucial, and it's something that he is not alone in saying, because former Senator Bob Graham has been saying it. And my personal feeling is that President Obama is acting on the same information. It's the 28 missing pages from the official report of 9/11 that has to do with Saudi Arabia. And as you and I have discussed on this show, you have a guy who is kind of an academic mouthpiece here at Harvard University for the Saudis, who claimed that when the 47 guys were beheaded, most of the people who were beheaded were people connected to Al-Qaeda and 9/11, which kind of lets the cat out of the bag that people connected to 9/11 were still operating inside of Saudi Arabia as late as just a couple months ago. So whether or not that tracks back to the CIA, and if you look at the long history of the Saudis and the Saudi intelligence service as an adjunct of the CIA, then you can start to get connect the dots. So Donald Trump saying that, which, by the way, he hasn't said in a long time. And, you know, today he spoke at AIPAC, and for the first time, John, he was using teleprompters.
Somebody said he's turned into a politician already.
He's finally turned into a politician. You know, it was almost like should I make an off-color joke?
Yeah, absolutely, you're kidding.
Yeah, it was like seeing somebody put into an ill-fitting condom. It just did not. It just wasn't working at all. And so, you know, at this speech, you know, he's basically parroting every single thing he feels he needs to say to probably assuage the big money donors inside the Republican Party, key among them Sheldon Adelson. And there was a very interesting piece today in The Week about Sheldon Adelson's newspaper, which is the most read newspaper inside Israel, and how it has been glowing about Donald Trump. So there may be some kind of bromance there, and he's going to need them, because the other people that spoke at AIPAC today doubled, tripled, and quadrupled down on the idea that there is absolutely no difference between the state of Israel and the United States of America, that they're actually the same state. That's what you would – that's the impression you would come away from if you had not known anything about AIPAC, the United States, and just came down from outer space and watched these speeches today.
I was shocked that Kasich – sounded so hawkish. I'd never heard him like that. I mean, when he was on stage with those other guys, he didn't sound as hawkish as they did. And my God, he was scary when he spoke today.
Well, now you remember that John Kasich was the primary functionary behind the contract with America during the Republican Revolution in 1994, the off-year election after Bill Clinton got elected. It was led, the sort of the titular head — I just like saying that every time I mention titular and Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich was the titular head, but John Kasich was the guy in the trenches who wanted to reform welfare, because, as he says, my mom used to say that it's a sin to not help somebody in need, but it's a bigger sin to not help somebody who isn't in need but pretends they should be. You know, I mean, he's actually kind of a throwback to the first generation of these ultra radical conservatives who metastasized into a Ted Cruz. But way back in the 90s, these were the guys that laid the groundwork. These were the original guys, you know. And Kasich, like Ted Cruz, and like Trump tried to do, evoked what? The kinship between Christianity and Judaism, how he went to Israel and he was there on Christmas Eve and he called home to mom, and it was an amazing experience because this is where Jesus was born, and oh my goodness. And then, you know, the thing that the funniest part of all of this is that the alliance between evangelicals and the state of Israel is actually predicated on the idea that if we return Jerusalem wholly and completely to the Jewish people, they will knock down the Al-Aqsa Mosque. That's the temple on the mount, right? The right. Dome on the rock, and it would have been the temple on the dome on the rock. If you get rid of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, that's the trigger event that's going to bring Jesus back. And then Jesus is going to come back, and he'll convert probably about 144,000 Jews. The rest will be damned to eternal fire, and those Jews will join the rest of the Christians with Jesus and spend an eternity with their Lord. I mean, this is actually what they believe.
Okay, the question is this. It's obvious that we will never have a true investigation into 9/11. It is obvious we will never have a true investigation into the murders of John and Robert and Martin Luther King. So why on earth does the 1% bother giving us a presidential election every 4 years? Why don't they just appoint a dictator, which they probably already have, that we don't know about?
Well, I think that they feel like they've done that so far, but I think, John, there is wiggle room in the system. And, you know, there's something fascinating about this election, and that's Chicken Little, The Sky is Falling?
Yes.
Well, the Republican Party has been Chicken Little about Donald Trump and how if this is not just bad for the Republican Party, but this is bad for democracy. And I'm thinking, no, it's just bad for the Republican Party, because last time I looked, there was a constitution and there are three branches of government. And really, if Donald Trump was elected and people in Congress did not want him to have a successful presidency, they could destroy his presidency after the first budget was passed.
They did it with Jimmy Carter.
They did it with Jimmy Carter. They have sequestered President Obama, which I think is interesting because, as I mentioned earlier, I think President Obama has seen the 28 pages. And boy, it's starting to look like President Obama used fracking as a weapon to decouple the United States from Saudi Arabia, force Saudi Arabia into a corner, use that leverage to then get the Iran deal. And then in an amazing piece called The Obama Doctrine by Jeffrey Goldberg in The Atlantic, and Jeffrey Goldberg had served in the Israeli Defense Forces in his youth. He has been seen as sort of a right-leaning foreign policy journalist. It's an amazing piece. And in there, President Obama says he's told the Saudis, you have to share the Middle East with Iran. What? I think that Obama, seeing the 28 pages, as many of members of Congress have, has made the determination that, yeah, let's do a little bridge fuel thing. Let's frack the heck out of everything. Let's drive the price of oil down. Let's force the Saudis into a corner. Give solar energy an 8-year breather where it can compete because the oil market's destabilized. And, oh, by the way, let's start leveraging ourselves away, putting a wedge between ourselves and the Saudis, because guess who is the real problem for American foreign policy? It's actually the Saudis and the alliance between the Saudis and the Israelis.
Then this question, if they know that from the 28 pages that it's the Saudis, why don't they do what they did with Iraq and just lie to us and invade them and take over their oil?
Petrodollars. It's the entire system has been intertwined with it, and really the relationship between the United States oil and defense industries, because I look at in many ways the military-industrial complex as an adjunct of oil, because the military-industrial complex is in many ways defense spending is a subsidy to the oil industry. The sure. oil industry would not be profitable if it wasn't for taxpayers paying to protect the Straits of Hormuz and all the transmission lines and protect all of the oil fields and to keep nations like Saudi Arabia humming along without having to pay for their own defense. So you have a very large group of people, not large, but a substantial group of people with a extreme vested interest in perpetuating Saudi Arabia and this model of intertwining defense dollars with the hydrocarbon economy.
Well, I guess it's also true that they would be the ones that maybe Dr. Judy Wood is referring to, and we have an opportunity to have, as Tesla said 70 years ago, everyone on the planet could have free energy. If you have petrodollars ruling the world, then you have these people building this moat between us and the castle of free energy.
Absolutely.
And so,
well, and I mean, let's not even, I am fascinated by Dr. Wood's work. I know of Tesla, but there's something even simpler. I mean, John, we need a miracle on this planet. And just imagine if you could actually just put something under the sun and get power from the sun. What if you could turn the sun's energy into electricity? Oh, you can.
Yes.
You can do that.
A magnifying glass.
It's, you know, you actually can do that right now. You can put solar panels on your roof and get energy. And that upsets not just oil and gas. Think about it. It upsets trucking companies. It upsets companies that build transmission lines, utilities, shipping companies. There is a massive global infrastructure built around hydrocarbons. And I think, you know, solar power, I talked to a guy, I worked on a documentary called Belonging, and I interviewed a guy, he's up in Mendocino, and he was one of the first guys to develop a really functional photovoltaic cell. And he's off the grid up there. And he told me stories about how difficult it was to get his technology through and how many oil companies tried to buy him out and how his career was destroyed and so on. You know, this is something that – you remember Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the White House?
Yes, I know.
I mean, talk about – and just to, you know, variations on the chutzpah.
You know, it's – I guess from the early real Christians to even to Karl Marx – and all the revolutionaries, what they're really trying to do is trying to build a better society. And somehow we need to build a better, fairer, more just society. You know, I interviewed Buckminster Fuller back in 1970, and he said something really profound. He said, "John, let me tell you something." He said, "In 50 years, the greatest luxury in America will be to have a job, to have something to do." He said, "Because the truth is, you don't have to work. You will not have to work if the society is set up right. So if you have a job in 50 years, you're a lucky person." Anyway, I am indeed a really, really lucky person to have you on this show every time I do this show, Joe. You're just a treasure, and your news vandal today is brilliant. So before I ask you to tell us where we can get it and where we can hear you again, I want to thank Mike Kim, who produces this show for me every time I do this show. And I couldn't have done it without him. I couldn't have started doing the show without him. And on Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock, I want you all to watch the new CSI Beyond Borders with Gary Sinise, 10 o'clock on CBS. Okay, go ahead, Joe.
And I wholeheartedly endorse everybody watching that. And I agree with Mike Kim, does an amazing job. You can listen to me every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 on the Ocelli Effect. That's American Freedom Radio. Just type in Ocelli Effect, O-C-H-E-L-L-I. It's, you know, there aren't many Ocellis out there, so it'll come up. You can get the rundown by going to newsvandal.com. A little box will pop up. You can sign up right there. And as ever, John, I am the lucky person to have crossed paths with you over – the Kennedy assassination and many other things, and just grateful to have any time on the air with you.
Oh, well, Joe, you're a treasure. Thank you so much. I want to thank you all for listening. And Joe and I will be talking to you in a couple of weeks with a terrific guest who's also coming back, John Potash, who is going to talk to us about how America is being destroyed and Americans are being destroyed by drugs that are legal. Talk to you then. Have a great time. Bye-bye.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 I love you.